Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob, and reading today from Cries from Among Us, a book I've put together of several posts, actually 94 posts on a blog site, put them into a book, and I'm now reading it to you with a lot of comment. I hope that you will check out the book itself. It's available at Amazon.com. Just look under my name, Bob Faulkner, or just the name of the book, Cries from Among Us. It'll come up right away. Let me give a little of my own story here. I was never abandoned to a teen home. This is not my personal story that we're telling here, but I'm sure that at least one of my parents, a step-parent, would have been happy to send me to a home like that, but it never happened. Further, I have the happy privilege of being a friend of Bible-believing Christians and a friend of the accusers at the same time. There are mixed motivations in each group. I'll try to bring out every possible spin that I can in this story. Of course, you'll not read very far before you realize I've failed a bit in this effort. Tears will blur a person's vision quite a bit. I'm on one side of this for sure, but I'm trying to see the other side, as you will see. But listen carefully to both sides. I've tried to obey the classic words of Sergeant Friday. Remember him, you oldsters? Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. Sergeant Friday. Well, we'll move on there. But if my heart has won over my head at times, your comments will be appreciated. Just send me a note here at Sermon Audio. I've been known to change, but just by facts, only facts, not your angry feelings. If this were a real trial, who would be needing defense for having broken laws? Let's start with me. I don't want to be overly dramatic here, but I don't believe the Lord would be pleased with me seemingly throwing stones at others without taking some heat myself. I raised teenage girls. It was not easy. I was not totally successful on a personal level. My girls, as I still call them, have gone through the child-rearing process themselves now, and they found at least a little of what I experienced. They'll vouch for me that the challenges can be overwhelming. But no excuses here. I was loud. I was angry too often. There were unnecessary rules and regulations and restrictions. I have since repented and told my family so. In their upbringing, I've been one given to church ministry who often honored that, the ministry, more than the family, ignoring the greatest ministry of all. Well, there was reacting rather than praying when situations arose, constant need for control. The spanking, yes, there was spanking, but it stopped at the teen years, but there was verbal pain during the whole time. I had been raised in a restrictive environment myself, very un-Christian environment. I tended to pass it on. I also helped raise other kids as a teacher on Chicago's West Side, down in Kentucky also. Many painful years. What did I do with rebellious teenagers when I had a chance on the West Side of Chicago? Well, normally I called for security. I just pushed the button. Security, you got to come and get so-and-so here. No, I couldn't handle them alone. That's not a confession. That's an obvious fact that others who deal with teenagers need to recognize and correct if possible. Don't try to do this by yourself, especially if you have more than one. Once I slapped a girl. Another time I shook a girl. Both times brought censure and near loss of employment, and on the west side of Chicago it could have brought a lot more. But it's illegal to do that. More than that, it was uncalled for and showed my own problem as well as the students' problem. There was a better way. There were good things I did over the years, as the other defendants will be able to claim. But if this is to be a serious self-trial, We don't cover our bad deeds with good ones. One thing, though, my mistakes were not policy. I did not consider every day, I think I'm going to smack some girl every time I come to class today. I'm going to beat my children every day if they do this, this, and this, and these are the rules, and this is how it will be, and if they break, no, that was not policy. The things that I did were not what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be that kind of person, but I was. This is a line that I'm going to draw sharply later in the proceedings. There's a difference between failed human beings and policies that are failed because they are not biblical. And again, I speak only to Christians here. But are there others of you who want to sit with me on this trial bench here? Haven't some of you been unnecessarily rough with your teenagers? Yelled too much? Punished out of retribution instead of out of love and correction? It's not easy, is it? Let's all be willing to say we have shortcomings in parenting, but none of that excuses certain kind of behavior, the behavior that I will document in the coming days of these podcasts. All of our behavior and all of their behavior is forgivable when confessed. But how does one confess when one has created a policy that one thinks is straight from God and then carries out that policy religiously? So let's go back to the little house in the big village. We're asking the little house that we mentioned another time and all other houses like it to judge themselves too. This home that I know about, a place for the troubled, somewhere in Midwestern America, is a private Christian boarding school for teenagers, founded many years ago. The idea was a Christian education for young people who were having some issues that parents couldn't deal with. The teens would learn ways to deal better with adults and their own problems. Well, years into their existence, maybe not too many years actually, charges came against the school. Students were actually split up, sent here and there, and some returned to their homes. They ostensibly shut it down, but within 2 months, the charges were dropped. The school was reopened. But the accusations continued and continue to this day. The school is a part of a particular denomination. Very difficult to shut down anything that's directly church-related if it's actually a part of the church. Other efforts through the years have failed. Accusations have fallen on deaf ears. And children, as far as I can tell, even from something very recent, children continue to suffer, or so I am told. This home and many others like it educates its students with ACE products. It's called Accelerated Christian Education. It's a Christian-based program, not recognized by very many colleges, as having the quality of modern educational tools. It doesn't have it. All of that was a negative. Released residents have been shocked to find that though they graduated from this ACE school, college was not available to them. Students in this and similar homes are supposedly allowed to write to parents regularly. Well, testimonies of witnesses that you will hear tell a different story. There's censoring. There's monitoring. They're saying only the right things. The same holds true with parental and pastoral visits. The same promise, but the same actuality. Well, there's the work ethic also. The students do work, but often they work for staff needs. Working, of course, is not a bad thing. We're told that some of them were ripped out of class to go and help work, and working for the staff in their apartments at times. Some feel that they were given slave labor, young ladies being asked to do the work of grown men. Well, that's only a taste of the teen gulag. In recordings to come, you will hear more and more. I'm going to try to tell you what witnesses told me, good and bad. But remember, if you have something to say, and hopefully everything I have to say is just the facts as we heard them from people who were there, and we have no reason to disbelieve scores and hundreds of people who were there. These facts may not be too pretty. Well, let's go over to Beulah Land. That's going to be my code name, at least for a little while here, a nickname for that home, Beulah Land, we'll call it. A fantastic home for the troubled in Smallville, America. It's only one of the many places that we'll examine in weeks to come, Lord willing. Seriously, would you consider being a resident at a group home? Just to visit, maybe? See what it offers? Stay there a little while? Or to do research as you consider sending your daughter there? Here are some frequently asked questions, facts that you might want to consider as we continue our investigation into America's teen gulag. What about parents? What about parents? Are there any requirements for parents in these homes? Custodial parents in this particular Christian home, and in most of them, must be Christian. They have to come from a Christian background. They must be part of a local church, preferably one of our, quote, our churches. Do parents make the decision for a student to enter a teen home? Well, often no one offers the student a choice in the matter. The parents are doing it all. And they deliver these children there. Listen to this. They deliver them there under false pretenses, telling their children that they're going to visit Aunt Susie and then drop them off at this home. Do you see something strange in the fact that Christian custodial parents are willing to give their children away and to lie to them about it all? Couldn't they work with local Christians to serve their child in some way? People that they already know? I saw parents giving their kids away in North Korea for financial reasons. They couldn't afford it anymore. What's the justification here in America? Are irresponsible parents as much to blame for the abusive institutions that we have by abandoning their children to begin with, thus creating a market for teen exploitation and abuse? How long do the children have to stay there? In some places, students stay for years. They have no place to go. These are throwaways sometimes. Unwanted children. Not always. Not always, but sometimes. It's a tragedy for sure. And at least one point scored for a home willing to hold on to such students indefinitely. But at what emotional price for the student? Often a serious argument ensues if the student wants to go before the time that they were prearranged to go. They'll say to him, well, you're not ready yet. The world is awful. You need to stay here. Even students who are over 18, the legal age, they should be allowed to just walk out on their own. The question, if you're asking questions before you go to this place, are your students spanked? Well, the official answer, at least at this one home that I know of, is no. But as long as it was legal and or unnoticed, the response was a decided yes. Why this has changed, we can't be sure beyond the legal part. Was it public pressure? Were they losing students? Certainly there wasn't a biblical basis for the change, was there? Most of these homes swear that Solomon demanded corporal punishment for most any defiance. How could they so radically change their faith because of a mere law of the land? Or have they changed? Is paddling continuing secretly? Please note that the Bible does not object to corporal correction. If it's done in love, if it's done in moderation, mixed with a bunch of other things. Many of these homes are guilty of excessive brutality. I'll show you later. They do use other methods of correction or punishment, like extra work, writing the scriptures, the demerit system. I wonder, do children come out of a place like that loving the Bible if the Bible was used as punishment? I'm just asking. Why do parents send their children to places like this? Well, desperation, negative influences out in the world. Christian values are not taught in public institutions. Many have in fact given up on their children, and in many cases truly have abandoned them. Some of these are actually Christian parents for whom such behavior, giving away their child, finds no biblical precedent. Others are derelict parents, even incestuous parents, trying to cover their sins by a giveaway like this. And so, Christian home staff sells the church and the parent a bill of goods. They make promises they cannot keep. The parents breathe a huge sigh of relief and they turn over their kids. Now, all of the comments I've just said are based on ex-resident testimonies. Well, what about the success rate of the teen gulag students? The honest schools will tell you there is no guarantee for success here. With all the beatings and deprivations and all the rest, the human heart is the human heart. At least they promise we'll keep your child safe from destructive relationships, drugs, drink, moral problems, or other dangerous behavior. But as we shall learn, they're not kept safe from unloving staff, shame tactics, and more, all in the name of Jesus. Is that safe, really? At least they say your child will be in school every school day, but many ex-residents testify, as I just mentioned, that they were dragged out of class to do the work needed around the house. Well, at least they will go to church regularly. They will attend devotions and memorize huge amounts of scripture. Yes, so much so that some students have freaked out under the pressure, and I'll give you proof of that later. Well, at least, says the promise maker, they'll have godly staff around them. Staff will work with them, play with them, eat with them, sleep in the same dorm with them. I will share with you the testimonies of some staff members who have been imprisoned with the girls 24/7. I'll share what they found at a teen home and why they were so relieved to go. Oh, but Beulah Land's a wonderful place. Why, some of our people leave here and go into the ministry. They become missionaries. A few of them, yes, a few of them, in spite of their time in a home like that, do indeed overcome, and they continue on with God. The scriptures were available to comfort them in their distress. Thank God for his word. I'm not sure what the numbers are behind the word some. It'd be interesting to know just how many students live to this day a successful Christian life, overcoming their past and the huge bump in the road manifested at Beulah Land or wherever. But, and they're sure to tell you again, not all succeed. Some resisted, they say, our loving care and the scriptures and the principles that we gave them. Of course, that's all their fault. They had everything possible that they could want or need, but they spurned the opportunity to grow with us. They go back to harmful habits, to destructive relationships. Well, caveats like these excuse the ministry home from any guilt or repercussions, supposedly. But there are other sums, S-O-M-E, that these ministries need to know. Some parents will be horrified when they find the truth of what happened at that home. Some will consider lawsuits. Some will protest in front of the Beulah compound and at churches where the director is speaking, some feel their lives are ruined forever, or at least could have been. I'm aware of hundreds of such ex-residents of that home and many other homes. Some will reflect that if this teen home is Christian, they want nothing to do with Christian. Testimonies to come will say that very thing. No matter how many kumbaya moments, no matter how fun are the games from time to time, some persons know what rejection is, saved or unsaved. Some persons know what a merciless beating is, saved or unsaved. Some persons know what the shame of a bedwetting is, saved or unsaved. You can fool some of the people. So are you still interested in signing up at your nearest teen gulag homes? I have some contact information for a bunch of them. I could gladly pass it on to you, including Beulah Land itself. Just let me know if that's a place that you would like to visit. Well, that was the May 19 post, and May 17, a good portion of it. We'll do May 20 next time. More questions about troubled teen homes. Thank you for joining with us today, and do come back and do some examining on your own. Really, it's out there. It's easy to find. Bless you. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. Bye-bye. Oh, Lord willing, we get to talk again real soon. Bye-bye.